Say you're at a bar one night, scanning the beer list, when you spot something interesting. Central Waters Brewer's Reserve Bourbon Barrel Barley Wine. It would certainly be a delicious option for your evening, but at 11.5% alcohol by volume, it's certainly not something you can have in a pint glass. You might be in luck. Increasingly, bars are turning to alternative glass sizes based on the ABV of beers. So if you're looking for just a taste, you're in luck. I'll have more on that story, as well as an assessment of Donald Trump's Wisconsin appearance, in today's Behind the Headlines. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thanks so much for listening. Investigative reporter Gina Barton takes Journal Sentinel readers to Oregon this week as she examines a faith-based effort to help ex-offenders who are leaving prison. The program is called Home for Good, and it aims to ease prisoners' return to society. Before release, prisoners are paired with church members who can help them become part of a faith community when they get out. In this segment of Behind the Headlines, Journal Sentinel crime reporter Ashley Luthern interviews Gina Barton about her reporting in Oregon and what she found there.
So, Gina, this weekend you're writing about a reentry program in Oregon. Could you tell me a little bit about what you found when you went there?
The Home for Good program in Oregon is a really interesting program in terms of reentry because the Department of Corrections is working together with different churches. You know, churches always have a place in prisons, they always have a place in reentry, but in most other states, the churches are kind of supplemental. They kind of go in there and volunteer, do the best they can. But in this program, they are working hand in hand with the Department of Corrections, with the Probation and Parole Office. So that's what makes it unique.
And how did the Department of Corrections out there and those faith groups, those churches, how did they forge essentially an alliance to do this work?
Several decades ago, Oregon started working with restorative justice, which is a concept that says the community and the offender and the victim all have to try to come together for healing after a crime is committed. So they want to work on making things right and making amends rather than just punishment. And so that's how this started. And what they came up with was a mentoring program where church members mentor the returning prisoners. They come visit them in prison first, and then when they get out, they welcome them into the church community.
And then a lot of times they're physically there when they get out of the prison, correct?
Yes, definitely. A lot of the mentors told me that it means a lot to be there waiting at the gate because some of these people have committed pretty serious crimes, sex offenders, murderers, things like that. So they're either estranged from their families or their families were abusive, and that may be what part of what led them to that situation in the first place. So to have these mentors waiting for them when they get out really means a lot, and it sends this powerful message that you're not alone out here. The other thing that is really cool about this program is that the churches are not just supporting the ex-offenders with prayer and happy thoughts. They're actually helping with practical needs, like helping them find housing, giving them rides, helping them find jobs. So they're able to also fill in that gap that the Department of Corrections maybe can't do all that for everyone.
What have the results been out in Oregon? What kind of rates of recidivism or reoffending are they seeing with people who do participate in this program?
Oregon overall has one of the lowest recidivism rates in the country in terms of overall reoffending. They haven't specifically studied this program yet. There's a study going on now, but they don't have the data available yet. What they do know is how much of a difference faith makes for prisoners. And there are a lot of individual stories about people who told me when I was out there that without this program, they would have been back in prison. And instead, they are doing things like getting married, getting jobs, you know, really doing positive things for society.
And how does this all compare with what we have here in Wisconsin and what resources are offered for ex-offenders coming out of prison?
One of the key things that makes this Oregon program work is that the Department of Corrections and the prisons themselves have a really robust preparation period for offenders before they get out. So ideally, they want every person to have a birth certificate, a Social Security card, a state ID card before they actually leave prison. And they have counselors in the prisons who help them apply for all those things, and they also pay for a lot of those things. Whereas in Wisconsin, although there are some limited resources to help with those things, it seems like it's not as comprehensive. So some of the people in Wisconsin that I know who work with ex-offenders say a lot of times people walk out of prison with nothing. They have no birth certificate. They have no state ID. They have nowhere to go. They have nothing. And that's not just Wisconsin. That's in a lot of places. So that's the number one part, is that they start all working together before somebody gets released.
And who are some of the most interesting people that you met when you were out in Oregon?
I met a lot of really cool people, a lot of offenders who had found a new community, a new family within these churches. But probably my favorite story was a pastor named Mike Cross. And more than 20 years ago, almost 25 years ago, Mike was a youth pastor at a church and ended up being convicted of a misdemeanor sex crime for having a relationship with a teenage girl who was in his youth group. And lost his job, was devastated, felt that, you know, he had been called to ministry and he had really made a mess of it. He would never do it again. Was married at the time, lost his wife, basically made this bad decision and committed this crime and just had to register as a sex offender. And so he was so devastated by all this. And she was too, you know, and so was the church. It was just terrible consequence. So he turned to drugs and he became addicted to methamphetamine and became homeless. And then finally made his way back to God and decided that his unique experience as a sex offender, he could help other sex offenders. So he and another guy have now opened their own church, and it's primarily for felons and sex offenders who can't attend another church because they can't be around children. And the photographer Mark Hoffman and I went to that service, and it was just moving and hopeful and really beautiful.
Read Gina's story in the Journal Sentinel this Sunday and at jsonline.com. As I mentioned before, the kind of glass your beer is served in may depend on the kind of beer. At least that's the trend at some bars. Beer writer Cassie Flanagan wrote about this trend. She joins me with the latest.
We wrote a story this week about something that's new that's happening at different bars when it comes to beer pours. So tell me a little bit about your article.
So breweries, their tap rooms have done this for a long time, you know, had different sizes of pours. You don't have to have just a 16-ounce. Airports, on the other hand, 16, 22. Who drinks 22 ounces of beer? So bars are starting to pick up on this, and they're going to let you taste or buy a 4-ounce or a 5-ounce pour of beer so you can decide if you like it. And it works because, especially this time of year when people are drinking higher alcohol beers, you can have more than one. You can try a couple of different kinds, and then you can be on your way feeling not so heavy, not so full, and most likely, depending on how many you had, not so drunk.
That's a very good thing in the state, unfortunately, with the culture here. So what are a couple of bars that are doing this?
ABV Social. I always have to say it twice. ABV Social. Yes. They do it. Their beer director, he's their assistant general manager, Jamie Shaparsky, wanted that when he first got over there. And it works because they have a lot of unusual beers. So it doesn't all have to be high ABV. Maybe you want to try three different kinds. You could do a flight, but flights are all same brand. But if you do the 5-ounce version they have over there and you do 3 5-ounce versions, you can try anything. You can try an IPA and then try a stout and then end with a sour if you want to. And you can try this variety of beers and not just stick with one beer all night. Then it gets warm and then you don't want to drink it and it feels like a waste.
Yeah, I do not enjoy that when the beer starts to get a little bit warm.
And it does that. And a pint glass is boring. They're heavy. They're just ugly. And little glasses go, they're cute and tiny and they let you drink a lot more. And then there have been bars for a long time that have served higher alcohol beers because they're more expensive and because they do pack a wallop in smaller pours anyway, 10 ounce, 12 ounce. And those glasses tend to be really beautiful, too. And it makes a difference, I think. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a fussy little girl, but makes a difference.
No, I think it does. And I think it's great for someone. I mean, obviously, it's a clear perk for you because as the beer writer, you can sample things at different places without it becoming completely cumbersome.
Or just leaving it. I've done it where I've just had a couple of sips and left a beer and felt really wasteful. So this makes it sense. I can take a little bit. I can taste it. You can't tell what a beer is like on one sip. You have to have at least two. And even then, you can't really tell.
So what other trends have you been noticing with all of the new breweries that are opening up?
Reclaimed wood and corrugated metal. And it looks awesome. It does. But, you know, people are trying to repurpose things. So there's a lot of reclaimed wood in tap rooms. And corrugated metal is cool because it's very industrial look. And it seems to be the trend right now. But, there have been, Third Space just opened. And they're in a warehouse, so corrugated metal makes sense. But they have 4 beers as their house beers right now. American Pale Ale, an IPA that's really good, an oatmeal stout, and a 4th one I can't remember. But they're probably the newest one.
All right. I'm excited. I have to check them out.
Yes, you do. And then Black Husky, which is cool. And it has no corrugated metal.
Mm-hmm. And how do you keep tabs on all of this, especially since there are, a dozen new breweries opening up in Milwaukee in the next year?
I think, there are 2 more left to go through the end of the year. Explorium at Southridge and West Allian in West Allis. And then there are 3 I know of opening in 2017 for sure, probably 4.
Wow. And you just have to go to each one, or how do you keep tabs on that?
I have a long list. And, you know, once you talk to somebody, they ask you about something, you go, oh, yeah, I have to call them. So, yeah, it's just a matter of trying to remember them all. People help out.
All right. Perfect. Well, that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kathy's story ran in Friday's weekend section. If you didn't catch it there, you can find it at tapmilwaukee.com. Donald Trump visited Wisconsin on Wednesday. How was his performance in the state? Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert and reporter Bill Glauber discussed Trump's visit during this week's JS on Politics show. They also discussed whether Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton will swing by the state. Here's Craig and Bill with more.
Well, first, let's start with that Donald Trump visit yesterday. We've joined by Bill Glauber, one of our political reporters, Craig Gilbert, our Washington bureau chief. Both were at that speech and rally in Waukesha. What was the reception for him out there? Friendly, of course, but what did you think?
Friendly, a little impatient. He was running late, had an interview to do on O'Reilly Live while people were waiting in the hall. Very enthusiastic once he hit the stage, and probably gives him a little bit of hope going forward.
What was your sense, Craig? I mean, he had kind of a rocky performance in the debate,
right.
And he's coming to Wisconsin, so...
Yeah, and there's some hangover from the debate. I mean, everybody, I think the consensus about the debate was that he was not at his best. He was not very disciplined. He spent too much time on defense and not enough time on offense. We heard a little bit at this event, his complaints about the debate, and usually the side that's complaining about the debate is the side that lost the debate. What's interesting is the Republicans have been very candid in Wisconsin about his Achilles heel, which is Waukesha. It's southeastern Wisconsin. He's not winning by as much as a Republican needs to win by in that part of the state. So it was a good move for him to come to this part of the state. I think the race is probably shifting a little bit in Clinton's direction in the national polling. We'll see what it looks like in Wisconsin. But if he wants to compete in Wisconsin, he has to energize voters, Republican voters.
Let's talk about that aspect because, I mean, on the one hand, you go, well, he's coming back to Wisconsin. You have that story from Tommy Thompson saying, you know, Don, come back. You know, the state's back in play. But then you have to go to Waukesha where it should be pretty solid for you. So what is that? What was your sense, Bill, about how, you know, the state, why is he in Waukesha not in Green Bay or some other part of the state?
They have still not coalesced around him. This was intended to drive Republicans home back to the Republican ticket, which Craig may disagree. I think they're going to get there, and they will. They have to. They have no other place to go. But it is a little strange to have to hold an event in Waukesha with 6 weeks to go, a little less than 6 weeks to go in the campaign. You should be in other parts of the state, like Wausau, like Green Bay, and they're not.
The silver lining for him, if there is one, is that he's actually doing he's got bigger leads in northern Wisconsin and in Green Bay over Hillary Clinton than Mitt Romney had over Barack Obama 4 years ago. So he's overperforming a little in other parts of the state. So if he can get a normal performance for a Republican out of southeastern Wisconsin, that's good for him. You know, most of these people are going to come back to him, but if there's any drop-off, and there has to be some in either turnout or Republican support for him in this very Republican, very vital, high-turnout part of the state, that makes it harder to win statewide.
You know, going forward, I thought what was interesting wasn't necessarily Trump, who did excoriate Clinton. There was no question about it. But were the comments of Rudy Giuliani, who was really harsh on Mrs. Clinton, on former President Bill Clinton. It was very harsh, very personal. Maybe because the guy didn't run against Hillary Clinton in 2000, he's getting, you know, for Senate, he's getting it all out now. But I think you can probably preview the way this campaign is headed in the gutter by what Giuliani said.
What was the gist? I mean, if there is a takeaway from the message, setting aside the, you know, the
Clintons are sleazy and we're tired of it. That was the message.
That is a message that helps in these base Republican areas, because the one thing that unifies these Republican voters is their dislike of Hillary Clinton. I mean, Marquette had a poll a few months ago where 1% of the Republican voters in Wisconsin had a favorable view of Hillary Clinton and 98% had a negative view. So that tells you something. I mean, the other striking thing about this event was he continues to come before conservative Republican audiences in Wisconsin and make an argument for African-American votes, which he did. He spent a considerable amount of time on, again, at this event in Waukesha for predicting that African-American voters aren't going to vote for Hillary Clinton because they're too smart for that. I think he's certainly got a better chance of unifying Republican voters in the southeastern suburbs than he does of getting a better percentage of African-American voters than Mitt Romney got four years ago.
So if you're Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, are you concerned? We haven't seen Hillary Clinton back in the States. So do they feel pretty comfortable with where Wisconsin is, do you suspect?
I think yes, and I think we'll see her eventually. Whether or not it's out of concern, it would just be the logical thing for them and or President Obama, who's popular here, to come to Wisconsin. But until the Clinton campaign spends money on television in Wisconsin, until she comes back more than once to Wisconsin, that will send us a signal that they think they're safe in the state.
You have some surrogates this week. Ann Holton, the wife of Tim Kaine, was in Milwaukee on today, Thursday. Chelsea Clinton, the daughter of Hillary Clinton, is going to be in Green Bay Friday. So far they're doing it with surrogates, no advertising, so you know they have to feel confident about where things are in Wisconsin.
For more political coverage, download our JS on Politics show. That's available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And that does it for this week's show. Once again, I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thank you for listening. Join me next week as I take you behind the scenes at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.